You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. I know I'm saying this for like probably the 10th time on a podcast that I've been on, but I'm always surprised by how many people didn't pick it up. I was a dancer when I grew up. Yeah. I danced years and years and years of tap because I was really obsessed with Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire. I danced ballet, modern jazz. I did all that. And then I went through puberty and went, my body was not made for dancing. I am not of that. I am an ectomorph and this is not the type.
You're not the first person to discover that.
Yeah. But I enjoyed it while I did it, certainly. Yeah. And I enjoyed the expressiveness of it. I did not enjoy the part I thought this movie, The White Crow, was going to get into, which is the inherent bitchiness of dancers towards each other.
Yeah, they kind of bypass a little bit about that.
It's touched on, but it's a thing I've heard commented upon often by other people I know dance. Like, oh yeah, dancers are all vicious towards each other. Yeah. There's a lot of competition, to be fair.
Bunch of catty people, all in skimpy clothing, all in very close quarters, things get heated.
True. But The White Crow, which sounds like it's a spinoff of a Marvel Universe film, is not. In fact, this is the story of who's been called Lord of the Dance, the greatest male dancer of his generation, Rudolf Nureyev. And I remember being a kid being very influenced by him balletically.
Yeah. Who would have known?
Him and Baryshkinov, even though I liked him better in White Knights versus Gregory Hines, killing a bunch of motherfuckers.
Yeah, you know.
I was like, can't you do ballet and shoot bitches?
You know, hey, who's to say you couldn't?
But even so, watching this movie, which is like a good 3/4 of it is in Russian.
Yeah.
I've been watching so much of Killing Eve lately, I kept expecting every time someone turns around real fast to have a gun and shoot whoever was there. I was like, oh no, this is not a story about an assassin. It's a story about one of the world's greatest ballet dancers, and specifically, more than anything, although it does dance around a bit, the period of his life when he first got to leave Moscow and go to with his company to Paris to dance, and when he first started to discover, hey, I like other cultures, I like art from other cultures, and I'm really annoyed that they have that the Russians have no interest in enabling me in this.
Yeah, there's a little interesting kind of in a no pun intended, but they kind of dance around some of these issues. We're led to believe that Nureyev, as a character, was not at all political, that his rebellion was purely aesthetic, purely an artist wanting to experience more, having more opportunities to dance more, to learn. And on that note, it works really, really well. I do feel by the end that I didn't fully understand the character, and part of that is because they make an interesting structural choice to this. It's actually written by the playwright David Hare and directed by Ralph Fiennes.
His second film.
His second film. And Rafe. I said Ralph, but yeah. I mean Rafe Fiennes.
His mom called him Ralph. Yeah. I'm going to call him Ralph.
And all I knew about this movie going in was that David Hare had written the script, that it was a BBC drama. It was directed by Fiennes, and he has a small but sizable role in it. And I just assumed this was going to be like a BBC costume drama.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone was going to be just a bunch of English actors just pretending to be Russian and speaking in heavily accented dialects. And I actually appreciate the fact that they bothered to translate the script into Russian and have everybody speak Russian.
Almost everybody in this is, in fact, Russian.
Yeah, even Rafe Fiennes, who apparently, at least, if fluently, he doesn't speak Russian fluently.
He certainly learned it phonetically to a point where you couldn't tell.
It was very, very convincing.
Fiennes makes a lot of very interesting choices here, which is and more daring choices than you usually expect from a BBC mm-hmm. production, which are often quite good, but usually a little on the staid side.
Yeah, you know? I would say so. They're often stagey, and this doesn't feel that way.
No, but which isn't to say that all the choices he makes works. He has a grand vision for how to tell the story in a nonlinear, time periods juxtaposed versus each other sort of style. But unfortunately, because of the mass amount of qualities of the man Nureyev he wants to establish, nothing ever really feels like it's properly balanced. There's always just little touches of things that feel like maybe they should be relevant or have a greater relevance in this movie in and of itself, but he is trying to make a film that takes one time period and represents all of who the man was, and never really comes together.
Well, one of the problems of any biopic is it's impossible to tell anybody's life in 2 hours. You could be the most interesting person.
I mean, unless you only live for 2 hours.
That would be a very sad story.
True.
However, and then it all ends in a dumpster. Sorry. anyway, you can edit that part out later. right after I go to hell. So he does this structural thing where they make the decision rather than do like the adaptation of the Wikipedia page for Nureyev,
yeah.
which is the danger of trying to do that nose-to-tail version of a life. They go, we're going to take a portion of this person's life. This movie begins in, I believe, 1939, when Nureyev, according to legend, is literally born on a train. He is a...
the Trans-Siberian Express.
He's from a very poor family from Siberia of Turkish Muslim stock. He did not get to dance until much later. He started off doing folk dances, but then, you know, his talent was recognized, and he gets sent to some prestigious dance academies, one of which is run by Ray Fiennes. So this is happening during the 50s.
Not but run by. He's just one of the prominent teachers.
One of the prominent teachers. Yeah. And then you see in the 60s, he's actually moved up to a different company in 1961, and that takes place over what I assume must be a few weeks, because they're in Paris on a limited engagement, all leading up to the point where he defects. And that is approximately where the movie ends. That's not a spoiler.
Sure. I mean, it was a huge international incident
yes.
at the time. He was the first person from Russia, I believe this is correct, that was very prominent and famous to very publicly defect.
Yeah, and he was a cultural defector as opposed
right.
to a political or science guy or someone from industry. That was like, no, he was a dancer, and that just wasn't done.
And this film is more interested in that question. Like,
right.
So what does that mean, a cultural defector, in terms of this person? What would that entail? And this gets very deep into his mind and who he is as a person in terms of that question. And I think it does that part of it very well.
Yes.
I think the problem is when it tries to explore other aspects of him, they just come out of nowhere.
Yeah. And I don't want to, you know, again, we're talking about a man who's been dead for 20 years now or more. He passed away in the early 90s. And this story ends in 1961. So there was at least 30 more years to the man's life where he became a prominent figure around the world.
Yeah, Dance with the Royal Ballet.
Every theater or every ballet company of note wanted him. He was brought in to conduct when his health got bad, but he was also a well-known choreographer, a guy who blended modern dance technique with classical dance technique.
Yeah, he changed a lot in the world of ballet and that's another interesting thing that they do in here where which I wish they had done more of, because there's this whole, you're sloppy, you don't understand ballet is about the rules, like that whole thing, like you've got natural talent, there's no denying that, but you keep not sticking to the rules, and then almost immediately, suddenly, he's this hugely celebrated dancer, and you never get the, wait, how did we get from that to that?
I mean, you have a couple of montages of him clearly
insinuates
just
he's just working so hard to get there. They're like saying, oh, because of things in your life, you're actually several years behind people that are normally your age, you're going to have to work three times as hard, and all that said, but the idea of like, oh, he had such a different ideas about ballet. So what other than the fact that you worked hard translates to you became the greatest male ballet dancer in the world?
And
the movie does nothing to say about that.
No, it doesn't. And I think a lot of those innovations probably, and some of his more well-known personal attributes probably become more entrenched after this movie ends.
Yeah.
Once he's free from communism, once he's able to live in a free society and kind of be a little bit more himself, I was actually concerned that they were going to whitewash the character of Nureyev at one point. Again, not a spoiler.
Or straight wash, you might say.
He died in the early... He had had homosexual relationships, some of which lasted decades, and he passed away from complications of HIV/AIDS in the early 90s. And this is a guy who had been, at that point, been outside of the Soviet Union, working professionally for over 30 years. So there's an enormous chunk of this guy's life that doesn't get explored. It's really about that moment leading up to him escaping the clutches of the Soviet Union. And I kept wondering, because the first time we see any kind of female character with him, it is a character that he meets while he's touring. She's it feels like a love interest, but there's clearly no sexual or romantic activity.
She's a very wealthy Chilean lady that he meets through other ballet dancers that he befriends who... It's like she may be interested in him at first, but seems to sense early on that that's not the relationship. But ultimately, she's just interested, to some degree interested because, I mean, hell, at this point in the Cold War, nobody got to hang out with Russians at all. And here he is, the greatest dancer in the world, arguably. And she's getting to go take him around, personally tour him through, you know, the classy and seedy side of Paris and show him all this cool
stuff.
Which
is one of the moments where the movie comes to life, when you start to see seeds of, you know, a guy who, you know, frequented gay bars. But you don't see that in this movie. You just see an inkling of where he might go with it. And things that, you know, the KGB had in their files regarding him. He has another in the second time period that we keep cutting back to in the 50s when he's, studying, he has a terrible injury, and he ends up having a very close relationship with his instructor, played by Ray Fiennes, and his wife. They literally invite him into their home while he's recovering from an injury, and that leads to a sexual relationship with the wife. Excuse me.
Which also, to some extent, the fact that that's focused on at all seems like a thing that people are going to have some issues with, I think, to some degree, because the man was clearly gay, and whether or not that happened when he was much younger, it's not wildly relevant in this story.
It's not. And the fact is, I think there's often been some discussion whether he was bisexual or not. I was just glad they totally didn't whitewash it out. Because you can see him with men. Straight wash, whatever the term may be.
I don't know. I just made it up.
But
it sounded more accurate than whitewash.
So I was sitting there kind of nervous that are they going to deny us this very crucial part of this man's life? They don't. It's there. But if you're looking for like a gay icon biography, that's not what this is.
Yeah, they're not focused on that.
It's not. It's incidental.
And it's funny. The things that like Fiennes chooses to focus on the most are very well done.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when he is using the nonlinear juxtaposition for reference to his appreciation of, like, exploring the world of art outside of Russia as attached to memories from his own past, it's quite beautiful and well done.
I mean, the first thing he does in Paris is he goes to the Louvre just so he can see,
the raft.
You know, Jericho's Raft of the Medusa.
Yeah.
And, you know, and touch the sculptures, and you start realizing that this is a guy who is looking at bodies and thinking, how do I take what's been depicted in art and turn my body into that?
And all of that is very well discussed in the film. There's a fascinating deconstruction of that particular painting that he goes to see by a Parisian dancer that he becomes friends with there, that I was like, oh, that was such a lovely moment there that really was very enlightening for like the Nureyev himself and what he was getting from this. All the stuff about his appreciation of culture and how he was growing culturally while he was in Paris in leaps and bounds is fascinating and incredibly well done, and clearly the stuff that interests Fiennes the most. All of these other little details, like him being gay and his friendship with his friendship with this Chilean girl, are dealt with like, well, I guess we got to do this stuff to get through the story. And it's not really again till like, I mean, there's a whole the second half of the second act and the almost the entire third act are just kind of going through the motions. And then it's not till the very end when we actually get to that last 10, 15 minutes. And by the way, this movie's 127 minutes long, so. But when we get to that moment where he's like, okay, I honestly believe the Russians are going to are taking me back to kill me or put me in a prison. And I'm freaking the fuck out. And I probably would have gone with them if I hadn't felt that way.
Yeah.
But now, because they were set to go to London and they're like, no, 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 you're going to Russia, for a grand performance
for Khrushchev.
Yeah.
And, which is the first story they gave.
Oh, yeah. All by yourself.
Yeah.
And he's like, help, help.
Yeah.
And that whole sequence is pretty cool. And I kind of wish.
It's a spy thriller moment.
That's, why wasn't that sequence the bookended, non-linear, like, juxtaposition
throughout the film? Where he literally has to, well, I won't say literally because we don't have to sit through it literally, but there's a moment where he's allowed to be alone for 45 minutes while a decision is being made as to his legal status. And to me, that was the moment. If you had started off with, you know, the precipitation of the defection moment to, like, okay, what is this guy going to think about for 45 minutes while his fate is being weighed? And to me, that's the place where you go, okay, he's going to look back at how he got here. But you know what? We're not the writers of this show, and that's what they chose to do. It's largely successful, but at times it can be a little bit confusing because there are moments where the middle period and the latter period look so much the same visually. And the actor playing Nureyev, who I don't know the man's name. I believe he's Russian.
Oleg Ivenko. This is his first acting role. Yeah. He is a extremely well-known dancer, Russian dancer.
I mean, it's clear.
There's no way you could have hired a non-professional dancer to do this role after you've seen this film. You're like, there's no way that guy's not a professional dancer.
I mean, and the pressure, I can only imagine, of having to play Nureyev. You're not just playing a ballet dancer. You're playing one of the greats.
He does kind of look like Nureyev, but honestly, he looks a lot like a clean-shaven young Jensen Ackles.
You know,
like
this
a lot.
If they'd made this movie 30 years ago, they would have cast Baryshnikov in it.
Right, you know? Right, of course.
It's like, but they'd need a young dancer who kind of has that look at that build and the technical abilities. You know more about dance than I do, at least in terms of having done it.
I thought he handled it both aspects, both the dance and the performance, the acting performance, quite well.
Yeah, ultimately. I mean, Baryshnikov was a wonderful dancer and an adequate actor in the right material.
He was not bad.
Yeah. But, you know, like so many actors who come out of a different field, whether it's athletics or dance or music, you know, not everybody is going to be able to bring the same level of acting chops that they bring to their other craft.
Yeah.
This guy manages to cross both.
I'm sorry,
having a monkey fight.
No, my monkey rubbed up against me, and apparently he got all wet somehow. So I was like, you're soaking wet. What is that? I think they must have tipped over their water bowl.
Ah, okay.
Sorry.
No.
The occasional thing that happens to all critics on occasion and during the middle of a review.
You know, I remember Roger Ebert and Siskel and Ebert all the time. The cat was just ruining all the takes.
Of course.
You know, but no, as far as dancing and acting goes, this guy really knocks it out of the park considering it's his first film. I never for a moment ever questioned that this guy is playing this role and that he's inhabiting the character. Is he as good a dancer as Nureyev? I couldn't tell you.
I mean, the stuff he pulls off looks exquisite. Almost certainly not, but I honestly, even as a former dancer, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure someone who was intimately involved with doing ballet would have a much more interesting thing to say about it. I mean, like, even as the film tries to show you, like they express early on, it's like part of your problem is it's like you're in a rush to get somewhere and it's about like having, like, knowing that all the steps that you're doing have a purpose.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, that's beautiful. But I'm incapable, as a viewer, of detecting the difference in the dance between the two versions. But yeah, it's clear that he really knows what he's doing. There's also a cast full of, like, really big-name French and Russian actors that I guarantee you have never heard of. Like, at least as far as their names. If I said their names, you'd be like, I have no fucking clue who that is. But people who are, like, multiple César Awards and have been in, like, 50-plus movies and stuff. The only one you might recognize at all is Adele Exarchopoulos, who was the lead role as Adele in Blue is the Warmest Color, who plays the role of Clara Saint here. But most of these people, I'm like, there were a couple I was like, I know I've seen you in something, but I can't place it.
Yeah,
but
there's no weak link in this movie. The weakest link
As
far as acting goes, the weakest link in this movie, unfortunately, might be Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
He makes some really interesting choices.
They just don't all work.
They don't work. all the time. Again, I had a lot of time sometimes realizing, wait, am I in the second period or the third period? At least when you're in the first period, which is his childhood, I mean, which is actually, I think, one of the most beautifully shot portions of the movie. It's not in pure black and white. It's just so desaturated.
Right.
It's just Siberia in poverty. And you see where this guy started and how he got to, you know, these huge theaters. Unfortunately, there's not the same level of visual cues to indicate the second and third time period because they're very close to one another chronologically
and
visually.
And that's a big problem with the film, quite frankly. A lot of the cuts, like I said, are very jagged and sudden. And there's not even really a color tone change for those two periods to indicate any difference. The film is shot kind of dark.
It's a very dark film.
Yeah, which is odd choice.
Well, I also think something to do with our projection.
It's a Violet Crown, though. They usually have top-notch bulbs there.
They usually do. But
maybe they changed their thing. I don't know.
The very first shot of the movie, I thought, boy, this looks too dark.
We just saw John Wick there, and it looked bright and great. So I can't
help
but...
In the same theater?
Yeah, in the same theater.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
so I'm like, oh, well...
It might be intentional.
Maybe it's intentional, or maybe something was wrong with the digital print they sent them.
Possibly.
But I can tell you, I kept thinking, man, it's really... odd choice to make this as dark as it is, considering, like, if they'd shot the stuff in Russia that way, I'd be like, yeah, Russia's always overcast, it's grim. Paris should be light and bright, and that is not the case here. And even if it was with a lesser bulb, you still should have been able to detect a definite difference between those two time periods, and you can't.
At some point, the only way I could tell was like, oh, they're talking French. Okay, so they're obviously in Paris, you know. But yeah, if he goes to bed in the middle time period in Russia and then wakes up the next day and he's walking down the street, there's nothing to tell you that he's jumped forward in time.
Like, all the Paris stuff is told very straightforward and linearly when it is in Paris, but the stuff in Russia dances all over the goddamn place.
It's very fragmentary. I think it's an intentional choice to make it feel more observational, to not be like this, you know, completely linear narrative of this happens and this happens. And some of those moments really work, where you just get to spend time with the character, where he's just practicing.
You could say they're just dancing all over the place.
I knew you said it, but I was going to leave it alone because you said it before.
You're going to ballet it alone.
ballet it live. I was going to say it's a faux pas, or is that a pas de deux? I forget what they're called.
See, I love that you can play along. Yeah. All right, let's go to final thoughts, Marco.
Well, again, I really like this movie, and it may sound like I'm running it down, because I've said some critical things, but overall, in spite of the fact that it has some pacing issues, I think that final act is really good, when it kind of becomes that spy thriller, where it's like, holy shit, how does a man get out of an airport and evade custody from his Russian handlers? I think that moment, that sequence alone is probably, I won't say worth the price of admission, I think Mr. Oleg Ovyenko, whatever his name is definitely worth...
Close enough.
He's definitely worth watching in this. Ralph Fiennes makes some interesting choices. They don't all work. But overall, I enjoyed this movie quite a bit. I give this... I give this 8 out of 10 much-needed cognacs.
I wish I could like it as much as you. And I started liking it that much. It took a while for me to start... souring on it. And that third act, that last half of the third act, does do a lot to brighten it up. But it's one of those films, the more I think about it, the more I have problems with it. I mean, 127 minutes is a long time about a single period in a ballet dancer's life. And weirdly, some of the best stuff in the film is the things that are the most retrospective, intellectual, creative type stuff, the things that you're kind of that the film asks you, assumes that you as a viewer are smart enough to put things together visually in statements about the creative intellect. I found that stuff really, really interesting, but there's so much that's just annoying as hell in the way that they just skip stuff and just jump right to the end results of something. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait, what kind of movie are we watching here? It's so awkward. It would be one thing if the only problem was, like, the jagged cuts through this nonlinear time, but it really just skips past really important things,
like that dramatically would have been interesting to see in order to get where the movie feels like you need to go, which is something you expect from a movie that's an hour and a half, not a movie that's 127 minutes. So I really did have real problems with that. And I also have problems, like I said, with the cinematography wise, this is not terribly impressive. There's points where it tries some stuff, but nothing is terribly innovative or new. Like there's a lot of like moments where I'm like, okay, so you're trying to get a symmetry shot, but there's nothing terribly interesting in this frame that makes it worthwhile trying to get the shot.
I found most of the modern material or the later period material was done handheld, which I did like.
I see that was off and
on. But it was a very steady handheld.
They were aware. And it tended to be stuff where it was like trying to show stuff through his eyes like that. Like, and a lot of times that's where people use handheld, the idea of it's like it's not as certain, you know. It's a mildly unsteady. I don't know. I'm very mixed about this. There's a lot of things I liked about it quite a bit. And I do think, especially for anyone who is into dance, classical dance, this is very much going to be worth your time. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly not something I'm going to like throw out the window here. There's stuff I like so much in this. It's just, it really feels like a rough draft of a movie. Mm-hmm. That you can see the glimmers of like, wow, this is almost going to be a good, really good movie, but it just never really quite gets there. I'm going to give it 6 out of 10. What do you call the pants with the butts cut out?
Assless chaps?
Assless pants.
They weren't assless chaps, but they were...
They were assless pants.
There were some assless pants. Hey, there's some ass in this movie. So, hey, if you like asses, male or female, this movie's got that going for you.
Well, there you go. That's the highest recommendation you could give.